The same guard was on again when Dr. McKendrick and Angus were let in, and Chrissy vowed she would reason with him. McKendrick, yes. Angus, definitely no. McKendrick and Angus went out, and the guard closed the door behind them.
Look,
said McKendrick, dragging Angus into one side room after another.
Machines, machines, machines. This was once a very well-appointed and outfitted hospital. Those big things over there, I have seen them in an ancient book, were called X-ray machines. It was a subject called radiology.
Radiation?
Said Angus.
No, man. Not on Johnny. Radiation is for killing cyclos. You're daft!
Those machines let you look inside the body and find out what is wrong. They were invaluable.
Those machines,
said Angus angrily,
were run by electricity. Why do you think we light this place with mine lamps?
You must get them running.
Even if I did, I see by that when they have tubes. The gas in those tubes is over 1,000 years old. We can't get any more of it and couldn't get it into the tubes if we had any. You're daft, man.
McKendrick glared at him.
There is something pressing on his brain. I can't just go plunging into it with a scalpel. I can't guess. Not with Johnny McTyler. People would slaughter me.
You want to see inside his head? Well, why didn't you say so?
Angus went off muttering about electricity. He told a standby pilot at the heliport that he needed to get to the compound fast. The pilots were very few, and they were being run ragged. They were zipping off to all parts of the world. They had a sort of international airline going that was beginning to visit every remaining pocket of men on the planet at least once a week. They were ferrying World Federation coordinators and chiefs and tribal leaders as fast as they could. More pilots were in training, but right now they only had 30, plus the two in hospital. So a casual request, even from a Scot, even from a member of the original combat force, was not likely to get much heed. Travel from the underground base to the compound was usually by ground car. Angus told him it had to do with Johnny. And the pilot said, why hadn't he said so? And pushed him into a plane and said he would wait for him to come back. With grim purpose, Angus went to the compound section where they kept the captive cyclos. A small area of the old dormitory level had been rigged to circulate breathe gas, and unreconstructed cyclos were there, under heavy guard. They numbered about 60 now, for occasional ones were brought here from distant mine sites, when they surrendered peacefully. Turl was captive elsewhere. Angus got an air mask, and the Scot guard let him in. The place was very dim, and the huge cyclos sat around in attitudes of despair. One didn't walk in the place without being covered by the guard. The prisoners expected a cyclo counterattack and were not too cooperative. The Scot engineer located Kerr and dug him out of his apathy. He demanded of Kerr to tell him whether he knew of any mining equipment that would let one look through solid objects. Kerr shrugged. Angus told him who it was for, and Kerr sat there for a while, his amber eyes thoughtful. Then, suddenly, he wanted to be reassured as to who this was for, and Angus told him it was for Johnny. Kerr was turning a tiny gold band around in his claws. Suddenly he sprang up and demanded that Angus give him an escort and a breathe mask.